You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back, everyone, to Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the NBA's winningest team. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. As we chat this Saturday afternoon, the Rockets are just over 24 hours away from tipping off a crucial Game 3 of the Western Conference Finals against the Warriors from Oracle Arena on Sunday night. To get a little bit of a more in-depth look at the X's and O's of the series and everything around the team, I promise you guys a guest with the traveling party out in San Francisco, and, well, I've got him. It's Craig Ackerman, radio play-by-play voice for this series, TV voice on the AT&T Sportsnet Southwest broadcast during the season. Craig, first things first, how's the Bay Area?
It's good to be back out here. It's kind of crazy to think that we haven't been out here since the middle of October for opening night. So it's good to be back out here, one of the better road stops in the league, and looking forward to the Game 3.
I'm going to start you with an intentionally broad question, because okay. There's a lot of ways you can go with this.
We're going to talk about the royal wedding? Is that the question? No?
Wow. Let's do a royal wedding-themed podcast. Wow, I had no idea until this morning, by the way, just how many people on my Twitter timeline were consumed by that. But apparently...
I don't get it. I mean, yeah. I personally don't get it. I mean, to each his or her own. But all the best to them and any couple that gets married. Yeah, I don't understand how people get so wrapped up in that
kind of stuff.
It's not my thing. Now, my wife, on the other hand... She has some things going on this weekend, no, but I can see her getting wrapped up in it, but me personally, no.
Yeah, and same mindset here, you know, if it makes you happy, go ahead, watch it. I was just surprised as to how captivating it apparently was to a large portion of my Twitter timeline. Anyway, broad question, other than the final score, what was the biggest difference Game 2 versus Game 1? What stood out to you watching that game Wednesday night that felt different from whatever you saw on Monday night?
They're just defensive intensity, and I think everybody who's talked about it basically says the same thing. I mean, they were much more active, they were much more aggressive, they had far less mistakes, far less miscommunications. Their transition defense was better. I think defensively, it was night and day difference. From game one to game two, and then probably a little slightly less than that would be, you know, they got into their stuff a little quicker. They didn't fundamentally change anything from game one to game two from the way that they run their offense. I just think they did it better, and they got into it quicker, which allowed some additional actions off the ball. But again, I think first and foremost, their defense was much improved. Their effort level, their energy level, their intensity level, their focus was significantly better from the first game to the second.
I think that's a very good point, and we heard from Mike D'Antoni at practice yesterday. He said when they looked at it on film, they had about 35 miscommunication errors in Game 1 that they counted. In Game 2, they had about 20, so that's cutting it in about half, and I think the defensive results certainly reflected that. Offensively, I think the story, certainly Eric Gordon, we've talked about him as a variable in the past, team high 27 points, 6 of 9 from 3, P.J. Tucker and Trevor Ariza, 8 of 9 and 7 of 9 from the field, respectively. And of course, you kind of spin it forward to Game 3, which is tomorrow night. There's an old adage in the NBA that role players play better at home, and certainly in Game 2 for Gordon, for Ariza, for Tucker, that was the case. But this Rockets team, and you can comment on this a little more because obviously you travel with the team, you're close to them on these road trips, they just seem to have, even relative to other Rockets teams, a different vibe on the road. You think of those two games in Salt Lake City last round, Game 4 in Minnesota. I know typically you hear that role players play better at home, and by and large, I think that's probably a fair saying. But with this particular Rockets team, I don't know, to me at least, you can mount an optimistic case that this team going on the road in this environment might not be as rattled as a lot of other teams around the NBA or even prior Rockets teams would be. Curious your thoughts on the home versus road dynamic for the supporting cast.
I agree completely. I mean, they were the best road team in the regular season. This is an older, more experienced group, and so, you know, hostile atmospheres don't bug them at all. They've proven that they can play at their best at home or on the road or all points in between. So I don't think, and again, I don't think the environment rattles these guys. As you mentioned, they've already won a road game against Minnesota. They took two games in Salt Lake City, which is a very tough place to win at. Now, obviously, playing this Warriors team on the road is a completely different animal than the previous two rounds, but they have proven that they can win in this building, albeit it came all the way back on opening night. They took a game here in Oakland last season as well, and so I mean, I don't think the atmosphere and the environment is going to shake this group at all. It just comes, again, it comes down to execution, and that's why this team won 65 games in the regular season, because they can win anywhere they play.
Where does Oracle stack up for you? You travel to clearly every arena in the league. Just in terms of the environment as a whole, is it, what, top five, top three? You mentioned Salt Lake City. Just curious how difficult overall the scene in Oakland is relative to, I guess, anywhere else around the association.
It's tough here. I mean, I think Golden State's great. You know, certainly doesn't hurt their chances when they play in their home building. But I would think it's a top five crowd. In the league, up there with, you know, Salt Lake and Oklahoma City, and you know, even when I think Eastern Conference, I think of Boston. Mm-hmm. I personally love the atmosphere in Portland as well. But yeah, the fans, you know, they're closer to you in this building than in terms of their proximity to the floor than most of the new arenas. I'm very curious when this new building in San Francisco opens up, not next season, but the season thereafter, how that affects the Warriors' home court atmosphere. But it's a fan base that's been, you know, known to have supported this team through the thick and thin, and up until the last 4 years, there was more thin than there was thick for, you know, two decades here with the Warriors. So, you know, I think it's part of the, you know, part of the fact that Golden State is so imposing at home as their crowd. But I think the more important factor is that Golden State's just a great team, winning here is hard. Up until this season, I think they had 12 home losses this year, and I think in the previous 3 years combined, I think they had like 9 or something like that. They've won 15 consecutive playoff games here at home, which ties an NBA record. Their last home playoff loss was in Game 7, you know, 2 years ago in the finals against Cleveland. And so I think a combination of the crowd, but mainly the talent level of the Warriors, makes this a very difficult place to play in. But again, I don't expect the Rockets to be rattled or fazed by the atmosphere. You know, if they're going to be rattled or fazed, it's going to be because of the Warriors and not because of their fans.
In terms of blocking out the noise, both I suppose literally and especially figuratively, that's where I think Game 2 really encouraged me, because certainly it was a must-win game. You go in down 0-2 coming back to Oakland. That would have
felt... Yeah, you didn't want that.
Yeah, would have been really bad.
Disastrous.
Yeah. And at the same time, fair or unfair, they know the narratives that are out there nationally. They heard, and I thought some of the stuff out there about the Rockets having no margin of error was overdone, because let's be real, the Rockets did not play a perfect game the other night. James Harden went 3 of 15 from 3, and yet they won by 22 and could have won by 30-plus had they, you know, truly kept their foot on the gas the rest of the way. And, of course, that's not meant to be a shot at the Warriors, who are a historically great team. It's just a reminder that the Rockets, you know, it's not necessarily fair to say that there's no margin of error, because we have 94 games of evidence that proves that the Rockets are a really strong team, historically good in many respects, in their own right. But if you could just speak to the level of, you know, you mentioned the veteran presence earlier, I guess literally, but especially figuratively, their ability to block out the noise, because it felt like after game one, especially in the national media, there was this narrative of inevitability that easily could have taken hold of the series. And yet the Rockets, they found a way to just go on about their business. And as you said, you know, with game three coming up, that's the key thing. Just control what you can control.
Yeah, I think it's easy for them to block out that stuff, because there is a true significant belief in the organization from top to bottom, i.e. from ownership through front office, through coaching, through players, that, you know, their philosophy, their style of play will work as long as they execute it. And so there is a strong belief in what they do, and they feel like if they continue to do what they do and do it well, they can compete against anyone any night. And so I think that allows them to sort of, you know, block out the Monday morning quarterbacking about, you know, this group needs to fundamentally change the way they play, blah, 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 blah. That's just so laughable. I found that just so laughable in, you know, throughout game one and then the day off and then preceding game two, why on earth would the Rockets fundamentally change the way they play that allowed them to win 65 games and have home court advantage throughout the NBA playoffs up until the last couple of weeks? You know, they had the best offense in the history of the league. Why would they change? The perfect analogy that I make with that is, you know, if you look at a college football team, right, say they're running the triple option the entire season and they make it to the national championship game, why would they change to a spread for one game and fundamentally to change the way they play if it allowed them to have all that success the entire season? And that is with several weeks of practice time. People asking the Rockets to change the way they would play with one day of practice. Are you kidding me? And everybody's like, well, the Rockets remain defiant. Well, no, they're not defiant. They remain true to who they are, and they feel like if they are, if they stay true to that and execute at the level they feel that they can, even against a team as great as Golden State, they have a chance. So again, if you look at the way the Rockets played, really offensively, nothing changed. They ISO'd about the same amount of time. In fact, they were slightly less efficient in those ISOs. They just got into their stuff a little quicker. They recognized the mismatches sooner. And so they just got into it quicker, which gave them some additional options on offense that they didn't have for whatever reason in game one. So, again, I think that this team can block it out because there is a significantly strong belief from everyone. There is a buy-in from everyone that if they do what they need to do, then they have a chance every night.
Craig, I want to ask you about the two guys that, to me, are the variables for this series. Certainly, on the offensive end for the Rockets, it's Eric Gordon. It's been a somewhat subpar playoff run as a whole for him. 15 yep. points in game one, but he did have the four turnovers. Game two, he was great. 27 points, 6 of 9 from three. So I want to hear what you think he did differently, besides the obvious of shots went in the bucket. But also, defensively, I've come to believe after two games that the variable for the Rockets defensively and what to watch during a game is the performance of Klay Thompson. And what I mean by that is, as great as Klay Thompson is, he doesn't create his own offense. He gets, by and large, and there are some exceptions to this, by the way, certainly Game 6 at Oklahoma City in the 2016 Western Conference Finals, he was a big part of stealing that series for the Warriors. But by and large, Klay Thompson is not a guy that creates his own offense. He gets his points off of your breakdowns in the half court, and especially in transition. That's when he was particularly lethal in Game 1, had 28 points, 9 of 18 from the field. Game 2, 8 points, 3 of 11, none after halftime. And to me, the performance of Klay Thompson, maybe not always, but lots of times, you go into those defensive miscommunication errors that Mike D'Antoni has talked about, you can feel how the Rockets are doing defensively, in my opinion, based on the amount of open looks that Klay Thompson gets. Is that a fair assessment? And go into, if you could, a little bit of thoughts on the Thompson-Gordon as the variables.
Well, you know, we'll start with Klay Thompson. I mean, he's a great player. There's no question about that. One of the great shooters ever. You might want to defend the guy, which they did not do quite often in game one. I mean, that's pretty fundamental to when you play against Klay Thompson, because if you leave the guy open, even if you defend him well, I mean, he's got pretty decent odds of knocking down shots because he's that good of a shooter. But if you leave him completely open, he's going to absolutely destroy you. I think it's sort of a thing for them that, you know, typically Durant is always going to get his number. You could basically say the same thing about Curry, and I expect Curry to shoot the ball much better in these next two games than he did in Houston. Typically, those two guys are always going to hit their number. And so when Thompson goes off and you add that third component, and it's all she wrote, you just can't. There's no way the teams can compete with Golden State and score enough with them when all three of those guys are clicking on all cylinders. And so if you're not going to be able to basically shut down Durant because he's just too long and too tall and too good and hits so many tough shots, and theoretically, you know, Steph Curry is Steph Curry, right? I mean, you can make an argument he's the most efficient offensive player in the history of the league when he's on. Then, you know, if you can slow down Klay Thompson, then you have a chance to keep up and keep Golden State to a reasonable number and have a chance to possibly stay with them and beat them. And I think the same principle goes with Eric Gordon. You know, even when James isn't going to necessarily have good shooting games, as you mentioned in game two, James is still typically going to put up his number. Chris Paul's not an elite scorer, but he's going to affect the game in various ways. And so if Eric Gordon is scoring big, we're talking mid-20s and higher, the Rockets are, it's tough to keep up offensively with Houston. I just think that the component with Eric is that even if you look at the games against Golden State in the regular season, he was 2 of 24 from 3, obviously, which is awful. But he was so aggressive attacking the basket in those games. And I think his aggressiveness in Game 2 was huge. And to me, the difference, outside of the fact that some of those three started to go, he was aggressive. He was looking to attack. He was looking to score. He was looking to dominate. And I think that's the mindset he's got to play with against Golden State, because when he does that, he's an infinitely better player. And then if you sprinkle in another guy like Ariza or Tucker or somebody else that can, you know, score in the mid to high teens, then you have a situation where it's basically impossible for opposing teams to keep up with Houston.
You mentioned Steph Curry earlier, and I want to get your take on what is the injury versus what is randomness. My take, you expect him to shoot a lot better in Oakland. I do as well.
Yes.
I think the 2 of 13 from 3, that's just fairly random. That's probably going to even out.
Extremely random. He's too good to shoot 2 for 13 again.
However, I think defensively, how the Rockets have exploited him, to me, coming off a grade 2 MCL, that might be the part that's not randomness. I think the defensive end is where the Rockets do have an advantage, and hopefully they're able to continue exploiting that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you want to, and they did that in the regular season. I mean, they hunted him in the regular season. They hunted him a little bit more in Game 2 than they did in Game 1. I think that goes back to them getting in their stuff quicker. Look, when they play the lineup of death, if you will, he is and I think the story on Steph Curry being a terrible defender, just like the narrative on James Harden being a terrible defender, is wrong. Curry is a capable defender, but amongst that group of five they have on the floor with Thompson and Durant and Green and Iguodala, he's absolutely their weakest link defensively in that group of five. And so you want to attack him. And obviously when you make guys work more on the defensive end of the floor, they're going to expend a little bit more energy than they otherwise would. But I still think the injury excuse is weak. When he came back, he killed it in that New Orleans series. He was very good. Everybody was talking about how, it didn't take Steph long to look like Steph Curry again. Now all of a sudden, you know, the guy might be hurt, blah, 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 blah. I just think that this is the best shooter in the history of basketball. Mm-hmm. He's too good to go 2 for 13 again. I think that was just a little bit of an anomaly. And quite honestly, if you're going to beat this Golden State team, you got to kind of hope that either him or Durant have an off night. They don't have many weaknesses. And so you have to, in part, get lucky. And so I think that had to do with that. And again, I expect him to bounce back and look more like himself. But I think another thing that might lead into this and has sort of maybe taken away some of his effectiveness is that, you know, the Rockets, which, you know, we've heard this for months and months and months and months, going back to the summer. You know, they were, Daryl Morey is obsessed with the Warriors, and the obsession with the Warriors is, how do you match up with their style of play? You got to play small ball. You got to be versatile. You got to be able to switch everything. And when you switch everything, as they do, you create isolation situations, which historically in basketball are not a very good play. That's why you theoretically want to switch everything, because you force teams to be less efficient. And so the Warriors, who are famously known for their motion offense and the ball movement, all of the Rockets switching by design is forcing them to get out of their comfort zone. Their passes per game are down exponentially in this series from what they typically do against most teams. And that's because of the Rockets' defense, not because they're not doing what they do. They're getting them switched up. They will live with Kevin Durant, as amazing as he is, hitting crazy 22-footers over Trevor Ariza over and over and over again, as long as it disrupts their rhythm a little bit offensively. And I think in part that may have something to do with Curry missing his shots. Now, Curry's been very good finishing at the rim, so nobody says anything about him being hurt or slowed down because of that. I just think he missed some shots, and I think the Rockets have a little bit to do with that. And again, the third part of that, as I mentioned earlier, is that you just kind of cross your fingers, hope and pray that one of those two guys are off, because again, they have very little of any weaknesses.
Speaking of the Rockets' defense, I want to ask you about Luke Bamute and your take on what he's going through, because whether it be physical or mental, based on the physical, clearly he's in a bit of a funk. And despite whatever he gives you defensively, if he's missing shots right at the rim, it makes it hard for Mike D'Antoni to play him. The flip side, what we heard from Mike at practice yesterday, is that the rest of this series, you don't have any extended off stretches. From here on out, starting in game three, it's every other day. So what's the balance between you need, and maybe the answer is to play Luke in small spurts, see what he gives you, build his confidence. But I'm just curious your thoughts on how you balance whatever he's going through, his limitations mentally, physically, whatever it may be, due to that shoulder, versus the reality that you need his defense. And bigger than that, you just need someone to fill those minutes in what now is an every other day series the rest of the way.
Well, I at this point, I honestly don't think that minutes are going to be a factor, even with the now basically settled in schedule for the rest of the series. I mean, Durant, Thompson have played more minutes than James Harden, Chris Paul, and so forth. I don't, at this stage of the game, if you have to roll, you know, 6.5 deep to get to the NBA Finals against this Warriors team, then you're going to roll 6.5 deep. I don't think that's going to be a factor. And now, it is a tough situation because, trust me, the coaches desperately want to play Luke and have Luke to be effective. But there's obviously, you know, I don't think he's 100% physically right. I mean, he's dislocated his shoulder twice, and it seems to me, I'm not in his head, that there probably is some sort of, I think he may have admitted in some form or fashion that there is a little bit of a, you know, a mental, you know, psychological factor with him not wanting to dislocate the shoulder again. But Luke was the Rockets' best perimeter defender the entire season. They absolutely want to play him here in this series. But if he's going to be an absolute zero on offense, like, unfortunately, has to be able to hit a layup in this series, it's tough for them to play him consistently and basically have the Rockets play 4-on-5 against the Warriors. And so I think that's why his minutes are down. The coaches love this guy. They know how important he is to this team. It's got to be hurting them to not give this guy minutes. But if he's going to be this ineffective on offense, it makes it so hard for him to play consistent minutes, because you need to have five men on the floor who are a threat to score, to even have a chance to break down this Warriors defense. If he brings nothing offensively, then it's tough to play him, even with the benefits from him defensively, because minutes, as I said earlier, I don't think they matter at this stage of the season. It's basically win or go home. If these guys aren't prepared to play 40 minutes a night in this situation, then they shouldn't be here in the first place. And the minutes, again, have been really manageable in the first two games of this series. And so if he's got to go with six and a half guys a game the rest of this series, I think Mike D'Antoni's prepared to do that.
On the phone now with Craig Ackerman, Rockets Radio Network play-by-play voice for this series. And, of course, next season, same as this season, he'll be back to doing a TV broadcast on AT&T Sportsnet Southwest for at least half the schedule. Craig, one name that we have not mentioned yet is Clint Capela. We talked a lot about Eric, to a lesser extent about James and Chris, because everyone knows what they bring, especially in the context of offense. Clint, in this series, defensively, I think we can agree, his rim protection has been very, very important, and also his ability to switch on to the guards on the perimeter. Defensively, he's made an impact. Offensively, the adjustment it felt like that the Rockets made in Game 2, there was very little pick and roll, because with how the Warriors switch, and especially if they're going to play that Hampton Fives lineup a lot, then you don't really have Clint Capela or whoever the, quote, big is rolling to the bucket, because the Warriors are able to combat that. Is there an adjustment to get Clint more going offensively? Or in this series, with how the Warriors are able to switch their uber athleticism and length, is it just a matter that for Clint's value in this series, it's what he gives you on the defensive end?
Yeah, you know, I thought going into this thing, to me, that the most interesting matchup was Capela versus Draymond Green. Obviously, there hasn't been much intrigue there, because you mentioned Clint just hasn't been much of a factor offensively. And I think you got to credit the Warriors, because, again, yeah, you said that they're so athletic and multiple guys can pick him up. And so the effectiveness of the high screen and roll, with Clint rolling to the basket isn't as effective as we've seen when teams play a traditional center. But, I think there's a place for him in this series. I think the threat of Clint rolling to the basket and catching lobs and finishing over the top of the defense is still important, because it's still that vertical spacing, whether they're doing it as often as they normally would or not, still needs to be a threat there to give the Warriors something to think about defensively. He's rebounding the ball decently, not great, but decently here in this series. But the Rockets have had an edge rebounding anyways, even without him putting up the similar rebounding numbers we've seen in the first two series. But yeah, just the threat of him and that extra element in the Rockets' offense is so important, because when you switch it with a guy like Nene, and that's why you don't see Nene ever playing against Golden State, regular season, postseason, or otherwise, he's just not an explosive leaper, and so that screen and roll doesn't make them think at all. At least with Capella on the floor to have it there, it makes them at least think a little bit, and the option for wraparound passes off the dribble penetration back to Clint. Still there, tip dunks, put back dunks, offensive rebounds. I mean, he's basically been the Rockets' main offensive rebounder in the playoffs, as they've concentrated so heavily in transition defense, especially here in this series, and his rim protection. So there is still value for Clint in this series, and I think he is still providing that value despite not putting up the double-double every night that we basically saw in the first two series.
That's a good point on the threat of him as the role man. I mentioned the other night something I should have clarified, that they went away from the pick and roll. Clearly, they're still setting picks, because that's a big part of how they're able to get the switches onto Curry that they want. What seems to have been tweaked is not having Clint roll to the bucket or whoever the big is nearly as much. But as you mentioned, just the threat of him potentially doing that with the vertical spacing is enough to still benefit the offense and hopefully get a few more of the looks that we saw for guys like P.J. Tucker.
Yeah, that's where everything starts. That's where everything starts. I think I heard somebody talking about in the last day or so about, maybe Golden State should actually go back and start a conventional center and put Iguodala back on the bench. Hey, I'm all for it. Do it. I know the Rockets have taken care of the Hamptons Five better than any team ever so far in the first two games of this series, but I'd be more than happy to have Steve Kerr go back to a conventional big, because then I think ultimately that element then really opens up for the Rockets offensively.
Good point. Craig, last question for you. You mentioned on your Twitter timeline after game two that essentially a best of five series now, tied at one, Rockets have to find a way to get at least one in Oakland. Is there a strong advantage to doing it earlier in the series? Basically, when you look at this, if you assume that the Rockets are able to at least have a fighting chance, a pretty good one, I would think, in Game 5 and a hypothetical Game 7 at Toyota Center, does it get more progressively difficult to win at Oracle the deeper you go in the series in terms of Game 3, Game 4, Game 6? Or is it a matter of just grind through it and, regardless of when, as long as you get one, you still feel pretty good about your chances?
Yeah, that's a tough question, because my guess is that the players and coaches would tell you no. Each game is a separate event, and we're experienced.
Right.
We're not going to get rattled, blah, blah, blah. Everything that I was talking about earlier, if we lose, game three, we're certainly capable of winning game four. So I think they would probably tell you that. My personal gut tells me that if they're going to get a game in this building, on the road, in this environment, against an historically great Warriors team, it has to be tomorrow. And then you're really putting the Warriors back on their heels. You're ending their long playoff home court winning streak, and then perhaps the pressure then completely falls on their shoulders, then they would probably argue, then they've done that, we've been to three straight finals, it doesn't really matter, et cetera, which is probably truth to that as well. I mean, these teams are so good. But my personal gut tells me if the Rockets are going to get control of the series back in their favor, they've got to get the home court advantage back in game three. Now, does that mean if they lose tomorrow, there's no way they have a chance winning out here on Tuesday? No, it absolutely doesn't. But I think if the Rockets get the game tomorrow night, then the narrative of this thing really flips the other way around. And then they're sort of playing with some house money going into Tuesday and don't have to play with quite the same amount of internalized pressure that they would otherwise. despite, again, everybody on the roster and the coaching staff would probably tell you, it doesn't matter. But I personally think that tomorrow is the game they got to get.
Yeah, I would largely agree. I think it gets progressively more difficult the deeper you go into the series. And I think I've always argued, and I think you have as well, that the importance of home court advantage is not that you expect to win every single home game, especially with teams this good. It's that you want those really impactful games, those desperation game five, game seven, if it gets that deep, to be in your gym. Well, conversely, by that same exact token, then a game six at Oracle would have the same advantage for Golden State that you think a game five and game seven would have for Houston. So ultimately, I think to practically win this series, you don't need to be down 3-2 going back to Oracle for game six. Is that a fair assessment?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. That puts the Warriors in an advantageous position. Look, I know I can't believe some people called them the underdogs in this series. To begin with all due respect to the Rockets, and there's no way that Golden State's the underdog in this series. And so they're the favorites. I think they deserve to be the favorites. And yeah, you don't want to be in that position. It's hard enough to beat them, you know, once, let alone multiple times here in Oakland. But yeah, I just think that if there's a game, the important road game is tomorrow. And then, you know, if they win it, then you try to get greedy like you did in Salt Lake City and put the Warriors on their heels. If you lose it, then all of a sudden Golden State regains some of their swagger a little bit and so on and so forth. So I think they're capable of winning both games out here. Certainly, they're capable. Will they? I don't know. But I think if there's a game to get, it's got to be tomorrow.
Good take, folks. That's Craig Ackerman, lead play-by-play voice on the Rockets Radio Network on Twitter at @CA_Rockets. Craig, thanks so much for the time and enjoy the Bay Area, buddy.
Anytime, Ben. I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Sure thing. Thanks for joining. Again, that's Craig Ackerman, voice of the Rockets. Follow him on Twitter at @CA_Rockets. As always, thanks to him for joining, and thanks to you guys for listening, because that will put a bow on our final pre-Game 3 episode. Of course, we'll be back after it ends late Sunday night with full analysis of what happens and, well, ideally, what is a 2-1 lead for the Rockets, because as Craig laid out, it's a pretty big one. If the Rockets want to win this series, to me, Game 3 stands out as one that you would really, really get an advantage if the Rockets are able to get that particular game, especially in terms of instilling some doubt, I think, and kind of flipping the conventional narratives on their heads in regards to the two teams in this series. We don't have long to wait, just a little over 24 hours, so for now, I think that's an appropriate point to break it. As always, I am your host here at Locked On Rockets, Ben Dubose. If you want any more content between now and the game, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I am at Ben Dubose. The show is at Locked On Rockets. Aside from Twitter, we do have a few more outlets. We've got a Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, a website at LockedOnRockets.com. You can go there and access all of our content, all of our archives. And if you want to more regularly get our show or archives, another great place to do that, subscribe. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, so many podcast sources. Just search for Locked On Rockets and subscribe to us. Also, leave us a 5-star review if you can. That's how we're able to make the business model work and remain financially viable and attractive to advertisers to have this all work out monetarily to keep being the only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets. Also, if you've got questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan, don't hesitate to reach out. Certainly Twitter, Facebook, those are easy ways to get in touch with me, but we also have an email, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Whatever it may be, would absolutely love feedback, love hearing from you guys. This is, you know, the best time in a long time to be a Rockets fan, so if there's anything better we can do, then certainly do not hesitate to reach out. I appreciate you guys so much for tuning in. If there's anything we can do to make this show even better, would absolutely love to hear from you. One final time, thanks to Rockets Radio Network voice Craig Ackerman for joining us. Follow him on Twitter at @CA_Rockets. Follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose. And I'm sure you'll be hearing from both of us plenty during Sunday night's Game 3. And then after it's all over, come right back here to Locked On Rockets, the home for daily discussion and post-game analysis of Houston Rockets basketball.